This evening I'd like to speak about opening our heart. When we come on a meditation retreat, it's not uncommon for us to come with some hope or wish that there will be a kind of direct and linear movement, and hopefully quite a quick one, from chaos and confusion and pain to clarity, peace, bliss, and ease. And nice an idea as this is, it's not usually what we actually experience. But what we find ourselves engaged in, or even at times it feels confronted with, is a process of opening, a process in which our very being, our heart, our mind, our body, is being asked to open to the way things are, to life. And the process of meditation is one whereby we are given the opportunity to recognize, to understand the way we relate to life, and often the habitual and conditioned ways that we relate to life that don't serve us, and in that recognition to transform them. So one of the fundamental areas of life in which we can look at this way of habitually or unconsciously relating to our experience, to others, ourselves, our world, is in the context of where life is not easy, where there are challenges. And what we tend to notice, for the most part, is we either try and somehow shrink away from that experience to avoid it in some form, or we find ourselves trying to push the experience away. And in that we can sometimes kind of almost puff ourselves up or armor ourselves against the experience of our life. And that sort of sense of puffing ourselves up, it's a bit like what goes on if we hear a strange sound at night and you notice the tickle at the back of the neck. And what that is the little hairs on the back of the neck standing up or straightening a little bit. And this is actually the kind of response that's just the same as, I don't know if you've ever seen a cat that's just met a dog and it's all puff, all the fur stands up on end so as to make itself look a bit larger, basically. It's like puffed up. And there's actually a fish in New Zealand called, interestingly enough, the puffer fish, which when it's faced with a threat, it has a bladder that it can suck water into and it suddenly becomes a lot bigger. So if it's being attacked by a fish that's a little bit bigger than itself, it just blows itself up and suddenly it looks like it's more than a match for the aggressor. The unfortunate thing about the condition of being puffed up is that the fish can't really swim very well. It's kind of sort of bloated. And so if the predator's large enough not to be dissuaded by its increase in size, then actually it's actually more vulnerable than it was before. But there's a way in which we quite often react to what's going on by somehow trying to make ourselves feel bigger or stronger. The way we tell ourselves stories about what's going on or about what we think shouldn't be going on has the effect of kind of seeming to inflate our sense of self with rightness. When we know something else is wrong, we kind of make ourselves feel bigger by saying why we're right and why this person's thing, situation is wrong, why it shouldn't be that way. And it's kind of a way of trying to push away, push out of our experience that which we feel threatened by. Now, I came across a true story some time ago that illustrates this tendency and the limitations of it, I think, very, very well. It's an actual transcript of a radio conversation between a US naval ship with a Canadian naval officer near the coast of Newfoundland in October 1995. And this radio conversation was released by the Chief of Naval Operations. And it basically goes like this. This is just reading from it. From the Americans: "Please divert your course 15 degrees to the north, to avoid a collision. Canadians respond, we recommend you divert your course 15 degrees to the south to avoid a collision. Americans, this is the captain of a US Navy ship. I say again, divert your course. Canadians, no, I say again, you divert your course. Americans, you can, this is in capital, this is the aircraft carrier USS Lincoln, the second largest ship in the United States Atlantic Fleet. We are accompanied by 3 destroyers, 3 cruisers, and numerous support vessels. I demand that you change your course 15 degrees to the north. That's 15 degrees north. Or countermeasures will be undertaken to ensure the safety of the ship. Canadians, this is a lighthouse. Your call. And perhaps, as in the stories that touch us, we can recognize ourselves somewhere in there. In the way that we kind of sometimes seem to be shouting at life, get out of my way. But just as the lighthouse really could not adjust its course, so too life tends to be the way it is. And when we kind of struggle with it, when we fight against it, all we end up doing is expending a lot of energy and often causing ourselves a considerable degree of pain. Life is the way it is, and we have to learn to accommodate it, to open to our experience rather than to seek to overcome or defeat it. And in our meditation, we often have the opportunity to practice this particular capacity or develop this particular capacity of heart to be able to accommodate our experience. One of the things that we notice that goes on for us on a retreat when we're meditating is we come into contact with certain experiences that we don't easily know how to deal with. We find ourselves lost in them, overwhelmed by them, or somehow caught up, entangled. And there's a kind of one of the traditional Buddhist lists, and if you have any familiarity with the tradition, you'll know that there's a vast number of lists of the 8 of this and the 5 of that and the 7 of these and the 32 of those. And someone once commented, I'm sure intending to be quite respectful, though a little cheeky, that he thought perhaps the Buddha may have been a compulsive list maker at some point in his earlier life before his enlightenment. But certainly there are a remarkable number of lists. And one of them is known as the list of the grouping of the 5 hindrances or challenges, we could understand them or know them as. And these are experiences which are common to all of us, and that they really are opportunities rather than barriers in our practice, but we need to understand them for what they are. I've spoken a little already about the experience of sleepiness, dullness, and heaviness, which is one of the experiences we can come into contact with. We can equally experience its opposite, a quality of restlessness, where rather than having no energy, it seems we've got too much energy, and the body is sort of twitching, and the mind is bouncing from one thing to another, and it seems impossible to be still for a moment. Or where we find we're reacting with aversion, anger, resistance, frustration, fear, towards our experience, towards what's going on, or what we think may arise for us. Or we can find ourselves craving after a certain experience, wanting something very strongly, very deeply, feeling that what we need is, you know, this, whatever it might be. Or we can find ourselves caught up in a pattern of doubt, of uncertainty, of not really knowing what we're doing, or kind of wondering in a way that undermines our ability to engage with our practice, whether it's possible, or whether it's useful, or whether it's right for me now, at this time. And these experiences, drowsiness, dullness, restlessness and agitation, aversion and resistance, craving, grasping, wanting, that kind of energy of mind, or doubt and sort of an undermining quality of uncertainty that seems to immobilize or paralyze us. These are experiences that we need to actually be able to recognize. They tend to be quite unpleasant, quite difficult to experience. And what we tend to want to do is to exclude them. Or, if we can't seem to exclude or suppress them, we often feel that somehow we have to do something in order to make them go away. We have to get what it is we think we want, or get rid of that which we fear, or settle all the questions in our mind by answering them, even though they may be quite unanswerable. And yet these kind of experiences, which are very much the grist for the mill of spiritual practice, they don't really respond that well to the use of willpower or force. It can be kind of exhausting, and it's not that effective to try and suppress them. They have rather a lot of power, and they're not just kind of passing conditions, though at one level of course they are simply experiences arising in the moment where we are, but they're also qualities that arise out of quite deep places of not clear seeing, of where we don't truly understand the way things are, and as such they have quite deep roots. And in practice, we really need to be able to name them rather than somehow push them away. Because when we push away any experience, it has the effect of closing our heart, closing us down. And that is not a condition in which we can actually usefully grow in understanding or deepen in our spiritual practice. That sometimes when these things occur, we find it hard to be present. You know, we can be thinking, oh, this pain in my knee, I wish it would go away. You know, if I didn't have the sore knee, then, gosh, you know, I'd really be able to get on with my meditation. And then, you know, miracle of miracles, someone was listening, you know. The pain seems to go away. We think, right, now let's get serious. And a few minutes later, our eyes are getting really heavy and starting to fade out. We think, oh no, it's the sleepiness. What can I do about sleepiness? Oh, I wish I wasn't so tired. Gosh, I've always been so much struggling with tiredness. And we start, and before we know it, we're kind of feeling really restless. Why have I got all this tiredness? We're not tired anymore. We're restless, wondering when it's going to go away. And there's a particular term in the sort of the tradition for this multiple hindrance attack. Which we can recognize by the fact that we feel overwhelmed by lots of different challenging things. And again, this is not unusual. And if we look at it and think, this shouldn't be happening, this is all wrong, this wasn't in the instructions, you know, I've obviously made a horrible mess of this, and we somehow quite easily can take it on as being our fault, blame ourselves for it. And then we kind of feel like we've done it wrong. It's kind of easy to get lost in that. Or alternately, we can start to feel like it's not my fault, but it's sort of being done to me. I've got nothing to do with it. I've got no involvement in this. And I'm just a sort of a victim of this horrible sort of process that's going on within me, and I hate it. And that kind of victim mentality that equally isn't actually very helpful, doesn't really serve us. Because with any experience, we have a degree to which we're not responsible for it. We're not in control of it, and there's a degree to which we have a responsibility. And in the fact of the experience arising, we have little control. At the point where it's actually happening, sure, we might have been able to do something about it earlier, but we didn't. So at the point where it's actually happening, and having said that, actually often there wasn't anything we could have done to avoid it, but we'd like to think that, so we have a semblance of control or the illusion of it in our lives. But in the moment when it's actually happening, it's arisen, there's really not much value in looking to the why this happened and what I should have done differently. What's more important at that point is, how do I respond to it right now? And that is actually our responsibility. Literally, responsibility. What capacity do we have to respond to this condition in this moment, right here, in the face of it? And through a willingness to engage with our experience in that spirit, the possibility of transformation is revealed, is offered. Simply being attentive to the experience, simply naming it, knowing it for what it is, not needing to believe in the story that it tells us, nor yet having to get rid of it. This is the middle path, which is the core of Dharma practice and Dharma teachings, finding the balance between all extremes. And in this case, the extreme on the one hand of trying to suppress the experience, or on the other hand, identifying with it, believing in the thoughts and the story that come with it, about I must have, or I can't stand, or I don't know, or I really am like this, drowsy or restless. Rather than just seeing, oh, this is a condition presenting itself in this moment. What is possible here? Because much of the time what we do when we're not conscious is that we attempt to block it out and to harden it, to push it away. And it's like we have this, we sort of invest in this idea that we can somehow armor ourselves, defend ourselves against the suffering and the pain and the discomfort of our experience. But it doesn't really work, because we are sensitive beings. We feel life, and we can feel it incredibly deeply and tenderly. It can touch us in ways that at times are not easy. And if we block out those places and experiences that are tender, that are raw, that are painful, what we find out is that we actually start to become numb to our life. And this actually is a much deeper suffering. The disconnection and the lack of an authentic and vital relationship with our life, when we're unwilling to feel all that it is, all that it expresses itself as. And often in that sense of disconnection or somewhat numbness to our life, that's what can drive us to constantly looking for stimulation, for experiences that are going to somehow make us feel okay, or make it fill the kind of empty space. And yet none of the experiences can do that when we're in a place of disconnectedness, or when we're kind of numb or hardened. And what happens in the practice of meditation, in the being on retreat, in the silence, and the just coming back again to where we are, the hardness, the armoring, the solidity of the kind of psycho-energetic shell that we create around ourselves starts to soften, it starts to dissolve, it starts to break down quite naturally. It's not that you have to try and make that happen or even want it to happen. It actually just happens by itself. We can start to feel ourselves more sensitive, more open, more able to be touched by simple things, to see the beauty in the ordinary, and to actually feel again more deeply our life. And this happens simply, it's like tenderizing. It's like the unwillingness to feel and to be with our experience, the tendency to almost prefer to be lost in unconscious dwelling, disconnected, out there, out to lunch, as we say. That tendency, it takes the moisture out of our life. It takes the moisture out of our heart, and it becomes dry and arid. And whenever we bring our attention back, when we come back into our life, into this moment, whatever it is, whether it's just the smooth flow of an in-breath or an out-breath, or whether it's something difficult that's arisen that we just need to acknowledge is there, coming into consciously inhabiting our body, our heart, our mind, it moistens, it softens, it adds. It adds fluidity to the soil of our being. It lubricates the possibility of movement, of change within our life. That enables us to actually enter more deeply into our experience. When we don't do this, what happens is that the hardness and the armor that we can build around ourselves becomes like a prison. It's sort of there to protect us, but ultimately it encloses us and it limits us, and we feel a sense of limitation. And the sense of fear of looking out, of going beyond what is safe and comfortable for us. How easily that can limit us so profoundly in life. The unwillingness to explore those places that are uncomfortable, unfamiliar, unpredictable, or maybe in some form painful to us. And we really need to shed that hardness in order to grow. Just as a crab needs to shed its hard protective shell in order to be able to grow. If it doesn't, it will die. It needs to actually leave it behind. Be pink and tender and soft and juicy and easy prey for a passing seagull. Just for a little while. But if it doesn't, it can't grow. And that's really the same for us. So notice the ways in which we can close down. Blaming others, blaming ourselves, blaming the world for the way things are. Pushing away, saying it shouldn't be this way, it's not okay. I can't be with this experience. It usually means it's difficult and I don't want to be. And sometimes in that, we really need to listen to the message of our experience. Because when things are difficult, when they're painful, and we kind of want to not have to experience them, we want to not be in contact with them, what they're actually saying to us is quite simple, and quite effectively actually. What they're saying is, pay attention here. Now, we think we're supposed to be paying attention to our breath, so it seems like this is a problem. I don't want to have to pay attention to this, because I'm supposed to be paying attention to my breath. But the message is generally pretty unambiguous. It's pay attention here. And we see that because our attention goes there. Pain in the knee, pain in the heart, difficult pattern of thinking, contraction in the mind. We notice that our attention is drawn there to those places of discomfort, of pain in our life. And there is actually a value in them. They have a purpose for us. Because those places where we're hardened, those places where we're resisting, those are the places where there is something to be learned, almost inevitably. With regard to pain itself, very interesting, physical pain, its role. I mean, we might wish ourselves to be free of it. It would seem like it would be nice, wouldn't it? Never to have to experience pain again or discomfort. Yet interestingly, when I was travelling years ago in Asia and spent some time in India, Calcutta, had the opportunity to work in a street clinic that was helping people who suffered from leprosy and incredibly poor and destitute people on the streets of that city. And I learned something there while we were working with them and dressing their injuries and their wounds and treating them in various ways, trying to sort of giving them vitamins and minerals and things to try and boost their health. But the horror that one feels, you know, the idea of lepers and leprosy and the sort of horrible disfigurations that go with it that we associate with leprosy in our minds. Interestingly enough, leprosy doesn't harm your body tissues particularly at all. It doesn't cause those wounds or that disfigurement that we associate with it. What leprosy does is it kills the nerve tissue. In the extremities primarily, so that you can't feel pain. And poor people, it's not much education, if they cut themselves or burn themselves, they don't feel anything. Gets infected, gangrene sets in, until it's got to that point they haven't really noticed, haven't done anything about it, and at that point it's kind of too late. It's kind of sobering. kind of shocking, actually, to realize that for these people, to be able to feel pain, be the greatest blessing, that they would actually protect them. And for us, in fact, it is so. That doesn't mean that every time we feel pain, it's saying we have to sort of pull away from the experience. But we do need to pay attention and see what is needed here. Sometimes we do need to make an adjustment. The body, for instance, as I spoke about this morning. But other times we need to look at our reaction, our resistance. Because the reaction and the resistance is actually what we could say the infection in that situation. The tendency of the mind to push away at experience, to resist the way things are. And this really needs addressing if we are to be at ease in our life, to find peace. Khalil Gibran and the Prophet said, "Your pain is the breaking of the shell that encloses your understanding. And just as the stone of a fruit must be broken so that its seed may stand in the sun, so too must your hearts know pain." And this isn't supposed to be an advertisement for suffering, but to see that it has its place. It has its place. And that the power it has in our lives is not because of the experience itself, but because of the way that we fear the experience of discomfort or pain with a heart or body or mind. We don't want to have to contact those kind of experiences. And we could ask ourselves, how much of our life has been spent, how much of our time, how much of our energy has been spent trying to avoid that which we fear? How much of this retreat, of these sittings, have we spent trying to avoid that which we fear? To read a story. It's a story I heard given, or actually it was a personal story related by a Buddhist monk who was on pilgrimage and visited a monastery where I was practicing in India, and gave this talk which I later transcribed the story from and asked him if I could share it with people because I enjoyed it so much. So when I'm reading it out, when I say I, it's actually him, it's not me. "Many years ago I had this particular pain in my right shoulder. I would sit. Pain, I would think. Be with the pain. That will do it. Here am I, being with the pain. It's not working, you know. Maybe I need to do some yoga. That will fix it. Oh, that's good. Huh. Oh no, it's back. Maybe cushions. One cushion, two cushions, three, four, maybe to the left or to the right. It's not working. Doctor, can you help me? Chiropractor, osteopath, physiotherapist. For 5 years I had this pain. I had an extremely active and ingenious mind at trying to find every possible way to wriggle out of the fact that pain hurts and I don't like it. A very obvious truth, yet I hadn't actually come to that. Accepted what one glosses over in a few words. I don't like pain. Instead, I had acted on, I don't like pain. I hadn't actually examined the experience of not liking pain. I tried to think, well, you should like pain. Pain is good for you. Pain is bad. Make it go away. But I hadn't really looked into, I do not like. So one day, sitting in meditation, I thought, this is it, the showdown. I'm going to sit here for 5 hours, not moving, and I'm going to get over this thing. So pain, pain, wriggle. Why did I say that? Why 5 hours? After all, middle way, moderation and all that. Hours go by. 2 hours, 3 hours, 3 hours and 1 minute. And after about 4 hours, I was so sick of this pain. My mind had been through all the various circuits of be nice to it, be friendly with it, kill it, and came back to, oh God, this pain. And finally the mind just rested. It got tired out, I guess. Eventually ignorance does get tired after a while and has to take a break from being ignorant, and instead of ignoring it and repressing it, actually began to open to it. Without the let's open to it and make it go away, or let's open to it and that'll get me into some kind of cosmic space, but just, oh, all right. And then I began to see the sensation throbbing away. It began to appear in my mind as a kind of glowing light, throbbing, tearing, a tearing experience. And then because of the choiceless attention to it, I began to notice, well, there's that. And then there's this terrible kind of no, no, no feeling going on. Resistance. And with that a whole lot of bitterness towards the body, bitterness towards pain. Oh pain, I don't like it. It shouldn't happen to me. What did I do? I'm sitting here trying to be peaceful. Pain, go away. And this kind of moaning mind. As I contemplated my relationship to the sensation, it became clear to me that there was nothing I could do with the sensation, but I could stop beating it with my mind. I began to have this experience of deep regret for all the beatings and the kickings that this mind had imposed upon life, upon this body, upon itself, upon its own thoughts. Telling it to shut up, to be this way and that way. And I felt like this whole system was like some mangy dog that had never really been loved. It had just been told what to do and beaten. And in fact, this vision arose in my mind of this dog, a kind of mangy, hungry wolf, looking at me saying, how long are you going to keep beating me for? And I felt the sense of deep regret that there should be so much intolerance and hardness towards life. In my mind's eye, something in me reached out to this creature and started to pat it and to say, please forgive me. Then this creature turned into a cartoon dog. I always think of Scooby-Doo when I hear this. This creature turned into a cartoon dog and we were dancing. Me and the pain, me and the dog. And then the whole thing just exploded very gently. And the pain disappeared. It seemed to say, thank you, finally. I've been knocking on your door for 5 years. Thank you for opening. Thank you for recognizing that the problem was, I do not like, I will not accept, I will not open to you. And once you open, the lesson has been learned. The business is finished. Of course, when you hear a story like that, we think, oh, that's how you do it. And yet, it's really not like that, is it? Ramdas once said, you can't be with something in order to make it go away, because it knows. And it's really true. If you're being with something in order to make it go away, it's really just aversion, in a slightly more spiritually sophisticated form. If we're really being with the experience, the mark of it is that it's okay if it stays, and it's okay if it goes. And to see that this really invites us to reconnect with our experience directly. Not through somehow trying to bypass or get around or avoid the challenges and the difficulties that we all undoubtedly will experience. We cannot, in our life and in our retreat, we cannot avoid that reality. The story that we have, our life, our particular individual unique circumstances are just that, particular, individual and unique. But the nature of what it is to be a human being, what it is to be alive, this is universal. This we share with each other and all beings. And the Buddha spoke of the challenges of having a body, of birth, old age, sickness and death, as conditions the body experiences inevitably. And he spoke of conditions of the heart, sorrow, pain, lamentation, grief and despair. And conditions of the mind, when we're associated with what we don't like, when we're separated from what we do like, when we don't get what we want, how difficult that is for us, for our mind. And, you know, it doesn't sound like much of an advertisement for Buddhist meditation practice, does it? You know, come to a retreat, you can experience sorrow, grief, lamentation, pain and despair, you know, not getting what you want, being separated from what you like. All of that. And again, seeing that these conditions in themselves are not definitive of suffering. If we react to them by trying to avoid them, suppress them, deny them, these realities will create immense suffering for us. But actually, when we can open into them, when we can actually connect with the experience to feel into what it's like when these conditions are there, what it's like when we're not getting what we want, what's that really like on the inside? What's it like if we feel touched by grief or anger or fear? What's that like? Can we actually meet it? Can we actually connect with it? Even if we feel kind of out of touch, disconnected, that experience is actually the gateway. To actually feel what it's like to be disconnected is to actually reconnect in the very midst of the experience of disconnection. And when we actually allow ourselves to feel what's going on there, to feel what's there in our experience, to stand steady in the face of it, it's actually profoundly transforming because we come back into relationship with it. It no longer has the power to push us out. We're actually there again. We're actually connected again. And when we're connected, when we're actually there, there's space, there's possibility. And that space and that possibility is what allows the difficult conditions to move. It is of their nature. It is of the nature of all experiences to come, to go, to move, to arise and pass. All things are like this. And it's only when we resist or struggle with them that they seem to get stuck. And it's our very resistance to them that they're stuck to. They don't have that in themselves. And it's only because our resistance is continually being generated again and again that they actually seem to remain solid and fixed. Allowing things to move. Allowing life to express its movement. This is a fundamental aspect of what we're learning to do. To notice the conditioned and habitual tendency to harden, to close down, to resist. And to actually, in that very moment, that is the place where we learn to open. When we see that going on and we recognize it. Perhaps name it. Sense what it's like, where we feel it, what it feels like. Realize that we can be with this condition, this experience. Whatever it is, the fear and the doubt might say, I can't. It's not possible for me. And yet the fact of the matter is that the fear tends to project it into the future and say, I can't be with it because what if it gets worse or if it continues? But fear, and this is important, fear is always an experience happening right now. It's always a present moment experience. It tells us a story about the future, which is unknown, and therefore there's plenty of room for the mind to come up with all sorts of fearful scenarios. But the story of fear is where it traps us, because that's not its deepest truth. That's just the supposition of the mind moving. The truth of fear is in the simple immediate experience, which is uncomfortable, but which is actually happening in our present moment. The only place anything can really happen, and can be met there simply by feeling and experiencing it directly, knowing it as the condition of this moment. And as we develop our capacity to do that, there's a way in which we discover an inner strength, which is which is what we seek for when we try to armor ourselves, a sort of a strength, an ability to kind of cope or survive in the world. That doesn't really work. And yet the inner strength that we cultivate, that we develop, is the deepening trust in our ability to accommodate all things as they are. In this moment, this is the only place we're ever asked to have to be with it. We don't have to be with it all day or all minute or all week. We only ever have to be with anything right now. If we can remember that, it's much more simple and much more possible to meet the condition of our life. And in that, we start to sense that we're actually not as confined and limited as we might imagine ourselves to be. The stories we tell ourselves about who we are, what our problems and what our limitations are not necessarily the truth. When we actually reconnect, when we actually open, when we find the heart again in a condition, through our willingness, through our intention, through our courage and our caring, to actually meet what is, to come into relationship with, to be present in the midst of, whatever it might be, no matter how difficult. In that place, we're actually reconnecting with a life that is larger, a life that has more capacity, and plenty enough capacity to hold all of our experience. The pain and the joy, there is room for. And in that we can actually come to rest. We can come to rest in a peacefulness that is open, that is connected, and that sensitizes our being and deepens our receptivity to being touched by the peaceful dimension of life that runs deeper, that runs through all things and all moments. And that requires us to really be completely open to receive. Can we just sit quietly for a minute or two, please? May all beings live free from fear. May all beings live with an open heart. May all beings abide in peace.